Welcome to the 7 Steps of Relationship Repair, Episode 68 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Alwigon. No matter how strong or long-lasting, every relationship hits rough spots or tough times once in a while. Branch Isolay joins us today to talk about some very useful approaches to successfully moving through those experiences to heal, restore harmony, and grow as a result. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Branch Isolay. Each future is rooted in attitude, belief, and perception. Author, storyteller, and poet Branch Isolay writes about the strength of choice to change consequences. He's known worldwide for contemporary short stories that reveal emotions and issues often experienced but not always voiced. He posts A Thought for Today, short stories, and articles on his website, branchisolay.com, and on YouTube. As a podcast and talk radio on-air guest, Branch shares informative steps to build frameworks that support career, personal, and spiritual growth. Branch graduated from Texas State University, did postgraduate work at University of Houston, and holds an Oxford MA theology degree from Trinity Bible College and Seminary. Welcome, Branch. Thank you for joining us today.
Kathleen, it's my pleasure to be with you.
There are many times in every relationship when we hit a rough spot. Are there keys to recognizing opportunities to address issues?
In any relationship, those rough spots can come along. And sometimes, whether it's at work or home, there's some telltale signs that trouble is brewing. One of those is the other person may be pulling away from the relationship or avoiding eye contact or physical contact or even mental contact and just sort of ignoring the situation that's brewing under the surface. The second thing is there starts to become a sense of isolation and disinterest in the relationship or accomplishing goals that you had originally had on the schedule or your project. So there's some telltale signs, and we all see them. The problem is a lot of times we don't want to admit what's happening. We want to disguise it and think that everything is okay, and yet we have those red flags going off.
Well, you know, those telltale signs you talked about, you referenced as red flags, and yet it seems like those flags are more pink flags, because what you're talking about is sort of a passive experience, that withdrawing, that sense of isolation, as opposed to more aggressive, angry behaviors, behaviors we associate with upset, which would be a red flag and somebody might respond. But I think you're absolutely right that when it's that passive signal, that withdrawing, that isolation, that lack of participation that you were talking about, then it's very easy to say to ourselves, oh, it's nothing, or I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill.
You're so right, because, you know, when we get into a relationship, especially an intimate relationship, there's a lot of communication, you know, we talked all night kind of thing. Everything he or she says is just perfect, and I'm in agreement with them. So there's open communication. There's also an honesty that takes place. We want the other person to know more about us and who we are. And there's a vulnerability. We open up to them a lot of times and share or tell them things like they're our new best friend. So those three things are also indicators of a relationship that's growing, and that we can see that in the beginning of our relationships. And yet, when we hit those rough spots or there's problems cropping up in the relationship, all of a sudden, that communication and that honesty and that vulnerability really take a backseat position, and we start to pull back and not reveal ourselves to the other person. And of course, this continues to make things worse because we're not communicating and we're not being honest.
So true. And from what I'm hearing from you, there's also indicators of the connection between the two people weakening as those behaviors continue.
Are there specifics missed by relationship partners during times of stress or struggle that can lead to problems or issues?
Every relationship is obviously different and at a different stage in its evolution. And again, we're talking about both personal and family relationships, as well as relationships at work. So there's a lot of things that can be missed. I think in many instances, it's sort of just the opposite. When the person realizes that there's a problem brewing, they start to focus in on the specifics of what the action is that's taking place that's giving them those negative responses and negative feelings. And as such, we start to miss the obvious and the evident. We can go down that rabbit hole pretty easily when we're emotionally tied and we're starting to be threatened. We know there's something amiss in the relationship and we want to figure it out. But we get into that, I don't want to hurt their feelings, and I certainly don't want my feelings hurt.
Well, and also, I think that when we focus on what's not working, we forget to notice the whole picture and recognize what is working, which can sort of help balance out our perspective and keep us from going down that rabbit hole of obsessing on what's not working.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better.
Looking at the ways that we might damage relationships, whether we're conscious of that or not, what are the three levels of relationship damage as you see it, Branch?
You know, it's interesting. When we are having an issue in our relationship, we tend to focus on whatever the action was that's caused the problem, caused the trouble. And that's where we put our focus. In reality, it goes two levels deeper than that. Yes, the manifestation or the action that is causing the harm is the one that gets our most attention. But if we look deeper, we'll often find that the action is an outgrowth of a betrayal. And beneath that betrayal is actually the breach of trust. And that is core to what the real problem is. Once we have a breach of trust in a relationship, it can be very difficult to reestablish that trust. No matter if we correct the action, no matter if we forgive the betrayal, if that trust has been broken and can't be reconnected or reestablished, then most likely there's going to continue to be issues that come up as the relationship moves forward.
I can think of obvious ways that trust can be betrayed. I'm wondering, though, are there less obvious ways? I mean, we can be mindful to be faithful in a relationship, for example, and yet still there might be actions that cause a person to experience a sense of betrayal of their trust. What are some of the more subtle things that might happen in a relationship that would cause that experience of feeling that trust has been betrayed?
Wow, what a great question. Every situation and every relationship is different, because the people in the relationship are different. And we each bring with us throughout our life and subsequently then throughout our relationships, all of that experience that we've had since childhood. And at that point, the people involved probably should be looking for some professional assistance, professional guidance, professional help. Because it's only in an open environment with a disinterested third party, that is someone who's not got a bias towards either of the people involved and has the clinical background to assess. It's only when you've got a dynamic like that that people can actually open up enough so that the betrayal, no matter what its degree or level, it's going to be different for each person based on their life experiences. My suggestion, there is some professional assistance or guidance so that people can really discuss and explore, I think you betrayed me and its degree.
That's such an important point. I agree with you that everything that we experience in our lifetime forms our frame of reference and forms the filters through which we see and experience the world. And for each of us, it's different. And sometimes we don't even recognize those frames of reference or those filters until something happens, some kind of crisis happens. And so, of course, we don't always have the ability to say to someone as we're getting to know them and as they're becoming our partner that, from my frame of reference, this is a betrayal of trust. We sometimes don't recognize those things until it actually happens. And then we say, whoa, that was a betrayal of my trust. And yet the other person couldn't possibly know because we never told them, because we didn't know ourselves until the trust was betrayed. And I think you're so right that that willingness and the courage sometimes to bring in a neutral third party to help, we call it in mediation, peel the onion, getting down beneath those layers and recognizing those things that we never considered, like our frame of reference and our filters, and how peeling that onion can help people understand themselves better and understand each other better. And then those unconscious, perhaps unintended betrayals of trust in the absence of information won't happen as often or hopefully ever again. I know that from your perspective, once a relationship has been damaged, there are steps that can be taken to repair that damaged relationship. And as I understand it, you have 7 steps that you utilize or that you consider in terms of repairing a damaged relationship. What are those 7 steps?
Let me preface by saying a lot of times in many relationships, when we hit those trouble areas or those rough spots, one partner will turn to the other and say, I'm sorry I did whatever I did and that it harmed you. Please forgive me. Let's move on. And that seems to be the end of the conversation, because a lot of people don't realize there are some steps that we can go through to try to reestablish a framework and a ground where we can reconcile and get through the issue and come out the other end. So those 7 steps are these. First, we have to recognize that a harm has been committed by the action that we talked about earlier. Second, the person who created the issue or caused the harm has to be willing to take responsibility for those actions. Third, that person has got to understand and feel regret that they harmed their partner. Four, they need to have remorse. That is, they need to feel bad for themselves that they, in fact, did what they had done. Fifth, there must be some remedy or some redress that's agreed upon that's going to go forward from that moment. Sixth, a repetition or repeating that action has to be out of the question. And seventh, there has to be a repentance or a change in actual future behavior. If we commit that we're not going to do that particular thing or abuse or inappropriate behavior again, then we have to show by actual change in our behavior that that repetition is out of the question. So those are the 7 steps.
So if I understood you correctly, there was recognizing the harm that we've done, taking responsibility for that, understanding the depth of the harm and regretting it, having a sense of personal remorse for the harm that we caused, an agreed upon remedy, lack of repetition, and demonstrating over time that the behavior has changed. Did I get that right?
Yes, ma'am, exactly right.
Okay, so looking at the remedy, and you talked about that agreed upon remedy, what are ways that people can arrive at that agreed upon remedy? Is it a matter of negotiation? Is it a matter of a mandate on the part of the person who felt harmed and an agreement on the part of the person who has done the harm? Or how does that come to be?
That's the thing. As we talked before, what I think may be harmful or unrepentable may be completely different from my partner. So we have to get back to that place of communication. What the harm was and the emotion that's been triggered, and then we've got to come to some kind of a compromise of what that remedy looks like. And it could be different for every situation, because again, each one of us in that relationship is coming from our own place of emotion and psychological makeup, all of those kind of clinical things. But we've got to agree, if we're going to agree to go forward and to rebuild, to reconcile, to reestablish the relationship that we once had and hopefully make it better, then that remedy, the remedy has to be agreed upon so that I can do my part and you can do your part and we get back to that place where we are working together for our future, as opposed to, well, I'm going to do my thing and you're going to do your thing, but we'll somehow work it out. It can't be undefined. It's got to be agreed upon, and it's got to have some real teeth to it, some real substance that we can both agree, okay, this is my part and this is your part. And if we can make those things happen, then we can come up with that remedy that we need to go forward together.
So it sounds like arriving at that remedy takes a collaboration, it takes a negotiation, and it also sounds as though, from what you're saying, it takes being very clear, specific, and you implied it, you didn't state it, but I'm guessing also that the agreement would have to be realistic so that it could be lived with over time, and the change could happen over time, as you mentioned in number 7 of your steps, that the change has to be demonstrated over time. So therefore, the agreement would have to be realistic as well. Would you agree with that?
100%. Time is the key. We want it to change instantly. We want to get back to where we were or where we thought we were before the trouble. And everything takes time, especially when we're talking about healing and change. Those things simply take time to work through. But you hit it right on the head when you said it's got to be agreed to so that I know my responsibility and you know your responsibility.
So true. What's the most difficult aspect of relationship repair to realize or to understand?
The most difficult aspect to understand. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that, you know, the relationship may not recover. And when we are in a relationship and we're having problems or trouble, our first instinct, of course, in most cases, is to reconcile and make it better again. The truth of the matter is, you know, that damage may be so great that the 7 steps don't work, or we can't complete the 7 steps. The damage may be so emotionally horrific that there is no repair, that we just have to admit that we're growing apart and we can't get back together and we've got to go our separate ways. So I think that's probably the element that we don't want to look at, but the element that a lot of times becomes the reality of the situation.
And maybe some relationships might be able to transition into something else rather than necessarily having to go separate ways, that maybe there's a new kind of transformation that can take place. But I do understand what you're saying, that there are those times when the damage is just too great and healing will happen when the parties part ways. And so thinking about being able to recover from that damaged relationship, if it were possible, what's the key in recovering from a damaged relationship?
When we've experienced a relationship that has been damaged and possibly hasn't recovered, then we have to be able to look at ourselves and look at the situation, how we responded, and what kind of growth, if any, came out of that. Hopefully, when people go through tough spots, they come out the other end as better people, understanding themselves better, understanding how they responded to that situation and that person, and then looking to see, how can I avoid that kind of situation again? So the key element at that point is growth. Can we grow and be a better person, not only to ourselves, but to the people in our lives, to any new relationship? So we should always be looking for growth.
I completely agree. I think that's the truth for our lives in general, not just in relationship. What we're talking about here, what you're talking about here, is not just good thinking and good ways of looking at romantic relationships, but every kind of relationship, whether it's a familial relationship, whether it's a professional relationship, that it doesn't really matter the context of the relationship. It seems like the things you're talking about here would apply across the board in any context of relationship.
Couldn't agree more. Life is about relationships, and those are just 3 that we all experience practically every day. The family relationship, the intimate or romantic relationship, partner, spouse, that kind of thing, and the career relationship, our job relationship. You know, we spend 8 or more hours in our workday with a variety of people. And all of those different people, we have some kind of relationship with. So that's the great thing about the 7 steps. It can be applied to any relationship that we're having difficulty with. We can grow in every relationship, but we've got to want to be better. We've got to want to become better. And we've got to want to work with the other person so that they can become a better person too, a better partner, a better coworker. So it doesn't matter the relationship dynamic, the steps still work in all of our relationships.
Such sage advice. Thank you so much, Branch. And thank you for the time that you've shared with us today.
Kathleen, it's been my honor. Thanks so much.
To learn more about Branch Isolde or to read his Thought for Today short stories and articles, visit www.branchisolde.com. That's BRANCHISOLE.com and on YouTube. If you're enjoying co-creating peace, there are so many ways to help this podcast stay strong and live long. Choose one, choose several, and know that I am deeply grateful for your support in any form. Subscribe to Co-Creating Peace on your favorite podcast provider. Subscriptions improve podcast rankings. Share Co-Creating Peace with people in your life. Share the show on your platforms, tell your friends about it, and give Co-Creating Peace a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Become a patron of Co-Creating Peace by going to www.patreon.com/co-creating-peace. That's patreon.com/co-creating-peace with no hyphen in co-creating. Your sponsorship will go toward the production expenses of this podcast. Patrons pledging $10 or more per month will receive thank you gifts ranging from communication worksheets and workbooks to free communication coaching sessions with me and Co-Creating Peace t-shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. Contribute to the content of this podcast by sending me your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. You can get a free 30-minute communication coaching session simply by coming on the show to talk about a communication challenge you're having. We can change the names of all involved, including you, to protect everyone's privacy. Trust me, any challenge you're having, others out there in the audience are also having. So you'll be helping them by working through your communication challenge with me. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please send those to me too. Many episode topics and guests were suggested by listeners like you. The best way to reach me is to email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON at bridgesofpeace.com. I love hearing from my listeners, and I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by the patrons who support Co-Creating Peace through Patreon.com and by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.